Hey there, it's Melissa Brunetti, and welcome to the Mind Your Own Karma podcast.
Hey there, Karma crew. Thanks for joining me for this episode of Mind Your Own Karma, The Adoption Chronicles. Today I have an adoptee on the show, Jessica Pearson. Let me tell you a little bit more about Jessica. She was born in Billings, Montana in 1981. Her biological mother was a teenager who found herself pregnant, and with a family that wasn't interested in raising a baby, they decided adoption was the best option for them. Jessica was the first private adoption in the state of Montana. She was raised by a medical doctor and a stay-at-home mom, and it all seemed perfectly normal and good to her until she faced the circumstances of reunion and becoming a mother herself. From there, she set out on a decades-long healing journey and now assists adoptees with turning their trauma into triumph. Jessica is a certified life coach who also co-owns Path Nutrition and co-hosts her podcast, Wait a Minute. Here is my interview with Jessica Pearson. So we're welcoming Jessica to the podcast today. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. So let's just jump right in and tell me, what circumstances did you know about your adoption? Why were you put up for adoption?
Oh, that's a good question. My biological mom, she was about 17. And to be honest, the more that I tell the story, the more I'm like, do I even really know all the circumstances? Because I haven't dug too deep yet, which has been an interesting thought process. Like, do I want to go back and ask more questions? Because I am in reunion with my bio mom, but I know that she struggles with it too. So, you know, I don't necessarily want to, I don't know, dig too deep, but from what I understand is, you know, she was a teenager and her family thought about, you know, how could we raise this child? And ultimately they decided not to. I was told that they were religious of some kind, I think Catholic, but now I don't really know if that's true or not. And that, you know, it just wasn't, she was an unmarried teen and that was stigmatized and it just wasn't allowed. So they had to figure out something.
Yeah. You said that you were the first, was it
private adoption in Billings, in Montana. Yeah. And it's totally, I don't know if serendipitous is the right word, because I don't know if there's anything really serendipitous about adoption, but, you know, this teen looked up a number in the phone book and found a lawyer. And this lawyer happened to be friends with my adopted parents who happened to be wanting to adopt a child at the time.
Wow. So this wasn't even like an adoptee lawyer or anything.
Lawyer. And in Billings, Montana, I don't know how many lawyers were there at the time. I'm assuming very few. So I'm guessing it was just like, we just do general law. Like, we just write contracts, you know, I mean, not to diminish what he does. But, you know, it wasn't like Manhattan in 1981, you know, 1981 in Billings, Montana, it's a very small town.
Right. So what were you told about from your adoptive parents? How old were you when you were told? Do you remember being told you're adopted?
I do. I remember I had a book and I wish I knew what the book was and if I could find it now. But I remember I had a book and I explained, you know, you have two moms and two dads. You have the ones that made you and the ones that raised you. And we all love you very much. And, you know, I was definitely given this narrative that I learned now as an adult adoptee. Like, this is a very common narrative, which you were chosen and you're so special and lucky because not everyone gets chosen. And I mean, I totally believed it. Like, I didn't really question that until really recently.
Right. So you kind of always have known then?
Yeah, I just kind of grew up knowing and not really thinking anything of it. I think definitely when you just grew up knowing, you don't know any different and you're not really aware of what the alternative would be.
Yeah. So. Right. So what was your relationship with your adoptive parents growing up? What was that like?
I mean, I would say it was good. Like, they're just normal parents. My adopted mom has a bio daughter from her first marriage. My dad doesn't have any other children. And I mean, they did. They loved me. They raised me. Like, I got to take dance classes. I went to summer camp. You know, I was given a lot of opportunities that I know for sure I probably would not have gotten with my, you know, bio situation. But that's not to say there weren't any hardships. And now looking back on it too, I think of like some of these feelings that I had and how maybe it was related to adoption or the way that I was feeling. And I didn't have the words to express or to even know what to talk about or how to talk about it, you know? And then my parents got divorced when I was 13, which I think is tough on any 13-year-old. Yeah. But I think coming from an adoptee, you know, nervous system, that was really tough on me. And again, I didn't really have the like knowledge or vocabulary to know how to express what I was going through to my parents at the time. And now, you know, as an adult, we all have relationship and it's great, but I still grieve that idea of what would it have been like to have biological parents raising me, even if it's a fantasy.
Right. What was the circumstance of why they wanted to adopt? Could they not have their own kids?
Well, I know that my adoptive mom has had like previous miscarriages. I think when I was around 5, she ended up having a hysterectomy. She did have a infant or toddler loss prior to me as well. So I know she always wanted to have a big family and have a lot of children. And when she married my dad, I guess, I don't even know if they tried. I've never asked him if he had any infertility issues. Like, again, I'm just realizing like I haven't really dug too deep into some of these circumstances.
Yeah. And what was your relationship with your sister growing up? How was that?
So she's 12 years older than me, which I think is a pretty significant age gap, bio or not. And, you know, I know that she was a great big sister when I was little, but she was out of the house by the time I was 5 or 6. So I kind of identify as an only child in a lot of ways. And then when my dad remarried, I have 2 step siblings that are 5 and 6 years younger than me. So I love them. I wish I was closer to them. One lives out of state and the other one's actually kind of estranged at the moment. So, you know, it's just me. I'm just gonna hanging out.
Right.
And my mom, my adopted mom and her daughter, they are super close. Right. So like maybe codependently close. Mm-hmm. So our relationship is, to me, is vastly different than what they have. And I'm not judging that in a, you know, good or bad way. It's just something to notice.
Right. Do you feel like that's because you were adopted and she's biological to your mom?
I mean, I do, but I can't prove that that would be the case. I mean, I know I have, you know, friends that have more than one child and it's, you know, it can be different relationships with the same parent. But yeah, absolutely. I think there's something to do with that.
So you were able to find your biological parents and there was some twists and turns in there along the way, it sounded like. So tell us the story about how you found them.
Yeah. I'm like just thinking, cause it just, there's so much to unwrap.
I know. Go ahead and tell the whole story.
I mean, I think when you're young as an adoptee, you have this fantasy of like who your bio parents are, you know, they're like, she's a princess and she lives in a castle and she's just trapped and couldn't, you know, it's just like this fantasy. And I used to imagine that I would write Oprah and that Oprah would be so moved by my adoption story, which is like nothing really even that out of the ordinary. But for whatever reason, Oprah would be moved by me and she would, you know, find all of my biological family, but really just my bio mom. That was the only person I think I ever really ever thought about growing up. I never thought about aunts, uncles, half siblings, cousins. Like I just, not even bio dad. I just only thought about bio mom. And so, yeah, it was like Oprah was going to have us on. We were going to be reunited on Oprah. It was going to be this big thing. And then in reality, you know, I was in college 99 to 03. Like Google was brand new. And I had a file with her information on it. I had some information about like some of her likes and dislikes and just some, you know, kind of random information. And so I had Googled her to see if I could find her and she popped right up. And it was a mugshot.
Wow.
Yeah. And so that was like to go from this fantasy of, oh, princess in a castle to woman in jail. was just kind of like, whoa, that was like a surprise that I wasn't totally expecting. And even then at the time, I thought, oh gosh, well, thank goodness I was adopted because I dodged a bullet or something. That, you know, those were the thoughts that went back in my mind. I was like, oh. And then I Googled the bio dad's name that we thought was the bio dad. And he also had a mugshot. He was also prison. So
how did you get their names? Or did you get
they were written on a document? It's not a birth certificate, but the lawyer had documentation that my parents had that they gave me. And so I had some information. Okay. You know, my dad just kind of handed over the file and was like, here you go. And that was it. So yeah, I found them and then I was like, okay, well, this is a new circumstance. It is what it is. And I kind of just went about my life for a few years. And then after college or right at the end of college, I did register my name on adoption.com, which I don't even know if that's still around.
I don't know how people find you. I don't know.
Because that was probably like 2003, right? That was over 20 years ago. So I put my, you know, I uploaded my information, like my name, where I lived, where I was born, any information I had. It was my bio mom's name I put in there. So then if somebody comes looking for you and they happen to go there, then they can easily find you. And so I did that. And then maybe another 2 years later, I finally got a message and it was from her sister. So my bio aunt had found me and I got this message and it was on MySpace back in the day. And it said, hey, you know, are you the Jessica Williams at the time? That's my maiden name. Who was born, you know, on this day in this hospital in this town. And at first I was like, who is this? What is this? Like, I was kind of confused. Yeah. And then she, you know, so it just kind of unraveled. And she was so excited because she's closer to my age. I mean, she's probably 8 years older than me. So for, and she knew, you know, right. Your older sister got pregnant and then she gave up this baby. And so the sister was always like, where is this person?
Yeah. That's amazing that she, you know, as an aunt would go on that website and like look for you. Like she really wanted to find you. That's awesome.
Yeah. And it was just surprising because I never thought about aunts or anybody else besides her.
You still have relationship with her?
Yeah. So she got me in contact with her sister who, you know, we've been messaging back and forth this whole time. We've never met face to face. I feel like we are kind of on the same page about this boundary. I now 20 years later, finally feel like I think I can do a reunion and survive. I don't know if she's on that page yet. And I honor that and respect that because I know it's not just my trauma, it's her trauma too. Mm-hmm. And I actually was a guest on another podcast, Pulled by the Root. And I sent that to my bio aunt to listen to. And immediately, I'm like going to start crying. Immediately, she was like, I don't ever want you to feel like we can't have a relationship. And so I'm going to come see you.
Oh.
And I was like, wow, that's really impactful and meaningful. Like, I don't know. And it actually feels good to me because I've had other bio family that wanted to meet me. And I was like, I'm good.
Yeah.
But I just think that like we have a connection that we don't even fully know. And I'm actually really looking forward to meeting her and just like seeing how it goes.
So this is recent that she's.
Yeah. That was really recent. She was just like, that's it. Like, I'm going to come. Can I come, you know, to Austin to come visit you? And I was like, yeah, let's do it. And so it feels good. It doesn't feel like blah to me the way some of the other stuff has felt.
Yeah. I know sometimes it's like everyone's tiptoeing around everybody. And it's like, as the adoptee, it's like, you know, you want to have that, you know, it be able to have that boundary to say, no, that's okay. I'm not ready to meet you yet. But at the same time, it's like just having them put that out there and saying, I want to meet you is huge, you know, because we always feel like we're always the ones searching. We're always the ones having to do, I feel like a lot of us feel like that we're always the ones having to reach out all the time because everybody's like, well, I don't know, you know, but it is nice when that person reaches out to you and says that door's open, you know, it's huge.
Yeah. And I think the door with her has always been open. We just never really, wasn't a priority to me even at the time. I just was like, whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah, for her to offer that felt really good, and I'm looking forward to meeting her. That'll be like later this year. So
awesome.
Yeah.
So the person you kind of alluded that you thought was your biological father, I guess it was not. And then because you thought this other guy was your father, you had a relationship with this lady who you thought was your sister for years and years and years.
Yeah.
So tell us about that.
Back when I first found the bio family through adoption.com, my bio mom reached out to the guy that she thought was the guy, and he has like 7 kids with 4 other women. You know, it was just Pandora's box at the time. And I never expected, you know, nobody tells you or prepares you for a reunion or to know, like, it might not just be your bio mom. It's going to be like 20 other people. You just, it doesn't really. So I was like, so now there's all these half siblings, right? And another one who's also named Jessica.
Oh, wow.
And we connect, and she tells me she's known about me almost her whole life. And she's thought about me, and that she just couldn't wait to meet me or find me, you know, because it just, she had such a tough life with that guy and with her mom, and, you know, had a really tough childhood bouncing back and forth between like her mom and her aunt and just being under cared for, you know. And then she still became this amazing adult. She's a super successful entrepreneur. She's a mom of 2 that are already, they're already grown and out of the house pretty much. And so she just is amazing. And I always kind of was like, you know, would you be interested in doing a DNA test? And that kind of was like, I mean, I didn't press for it, but it just wasn't really responded to. And so then years later, we have this like internet friendship, and I always thought maybe like someday we would meet or whatever. But in 2020, I got pregnant, and it became more important to me that I wanted to know more about my DNA, because I've always had this like really great tan. I always knew that I would be potentially half Mexican or half Native American, but we just didn't really know. And I was just really curious about that because I'm having a child and I want to be able to tell him what his stuff is. And so I took the test, and a first cousin popped up who's, this woman's like 65, so I still don't understand that works out, because she's like a solid 25 years older than me. But I sent it to Bio Mom on like Facebook and was like, hey, do you know who this person is? And so she didn't, but she started to do her Facebook research and realized that this woman was like friends or related to this other guy on Facebook that was the brother of this other guy she slept with once.
Oh my gosh.
And she, you know, she was aghast. And I'm sure she had to go through her own stuff with this too, because I remember her telling me, you know, I'm 99% sure that this guy is the guy, but there's also like a 1% chance it's this other guy, but I'm totally sure it's not. And I was like, yeah, whatever, you're probably right.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
But it was this other guy. And it was like such a shock to her. It didn't really make a difference to me either way, because like, I do have a relationship with my adopted father. Like, I'm not really looking for to fill in that gap necessarily. Yeah. And because I didn't have a relationship at all with other like adopted dad or bio dad, I don't know, it just didn't really make a difference to me. But what I was not prepared for was that this new bio dad, right? The original bio dad,
the real guy.
Yeah. The real guy, like really, really wanted a relationship.
And he didn't even know that you existed, correct? Like,
had no idea I existed. And so there's that. And then, I have to go call this other Jessica, right? Yeah. Who's asking me, she's like, let me send you a baby gift. I'm like, oh my gosh. Well, before you do that, I have some major news. And I tell her, like, guess what? We're not really related. And she could not have been more cool about the whole thing. I mean, she's truly an amazing human. But that, I was so afraid to make that call. I just thought she was going to be like so disappointed, you know, and I was disappointed too. I was just like, wow, what a weird thing to have to say. Like, we're not actually related and your whole life has been a lie. You know, it's like, welcome to the adoptee world. Right. And then I have this guy who is like, hey, I love you. I want to be your dad. And, you know, like just wants to invite me on his family vacations, oh inviting me to like his daughter's events. And it was like a lot. And yeah. I just felt not into it. And so then it was really tough for me to try to be like, well, I don't want to judge myself for what I'm experiencing, you know, because I see in, you know, these other Facebook groups or whatever, how there's so many adoptees longing for a connection, or they've experienced like a second rejection, you know, and that feels so bad. And here I am, the stranger is telling me that they love me and I hate it.
Yeah. Felt uncomfortable.
I felt so angry. Like, who are you? Right? Yeah. You can't just come out of the woodworks now and expect me to like reciprocate this loving connection. Like, it's not even that I'm trying to be mean about it. I just don't have it. I don't feel it.
Mm-hmm. How were your adoptive parents with you searching?
I mean, I've also been thinking about this a lot, and I haven't shared any of these podcasts with them yet, but I think maybe one day I'll get the courage to share it with them. I mean, they were never like, don't do it. You know, I mean, I think maybe that's why my dad gave me the file. I don't know, but they haven't necessarily been active participants either. Mm-hmm. Or if I bring stuff up, it's kind of like, huh, you know, and then it's like, they're not asking me questions about what am I learning? What am I feeling? You know, how is it going? Like, there haven't really been any continued conversations where they're asking me things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to be okay with that. Because I don't know. I don't want to have like expectations or shoulds on someone else's experience or me. But I do kind of I guess I wish that they cared a little bit more.
Yeah, showed some interest.
Yeah.
So how do you think all of these intricacies of the reunions, how has that affected you?
I mean, it's just forced me to really look at more of the realities of adoption. You know, it kind of put me, I think I joined some of these adoptee groups on Facebook because I was like, wow, there's a lot going on. And you look, you know, people join because they're looking for support or you're looking for commonality. You know, it's like, is this because I'm adopted or is this something else? And, you know, you just start looking and learning. And then I start hearing more about, you know, adoption, and I don't know, it's really unraveled a lot for me in a way that's made it, I mean, I guess people talk about the fog, right? And it's like, oh, now I think I'm on the other side of that, where before maybe I didn't even really believe in the fog because I was the adoptee that was like, well, I had a pretty decent experience and my bio parents were in prison, so like, thank God,
right?
And now I see on the other side of it where it's like, I'm just seeing everything more clearly, where it's like, I see her trauma and her experience. I see my experience. I think about my adoptive parents and I have a lot of questions for them, you know, and that I don't know if I'll ever have the courage to ask.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it's brought up so much pain and anger and sadness and grief.
Yeah.
That like, I think I always had, I just like didn't know what it was.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And when you decided to search, did you said you were only thinking about your birth mom and meeting her. Did you think about where she was going to fit into your life or anything when you were searching? Like,
it's so crazy because I think the mind is so powerful and we tend to like limit our beliefs in a lot of ways or limit our experiences. And so for me, I was like, I always just want to see a photo of her. Like, for whatever reason, it never occurred to me, like, what if we did have a relationship or what, you know, it just was like, I just want to know what she looks like.
Yeah.
And now so that you, I know.
You had her name and stuff in that file, but you still just went on that adoptee site and put all your information in there. Could you not find her, or were you just kind of like not ready to do that? you saw a picture of her. That was good enough at the time.
Yeah, I think that was like a like some breaks. Like, oh, are you sure you want to connect with a woman in prison? You know, like, is this a safety issue? You know, you just don't really know what you're going to expect. And so I think that really put on some breaks for a while. And I just wasn't really interested. And then when I went back on, I don't know, I think just these waves of curiosity come, you know, you get a little bit, it's like, you get a little bit of info and now you want more info. It's like the more information you get, are you ever really satisfied?
Right. Yeah.
And so, yeah, I just wanted to know more, or I was just more open at that second time around to be like, yeah, come find me. Let's see what happens.
Yeah. Well, probably took a little time to process from, like you said, from going to the fairy tale princess that you thought you were going to find to what you did find. And, you know, to process that for a second and then be like, okay, I'm ready for the next little bit, you know?
Yeah. I mean, this has been over 20 years. I'm 43 now. That, like, it's interesting because I think you also think like, oh, you'll just like meet them and that's it. But yeah, the way for me, it's unfolded over like 20 years. I would have never expected that, you know, even, you know, 18 years later, you're going to get new information or, you know, have a totally different experience than you had when you found out.
Yeah. Well, the guy that you first thought was your father, did you have any relationship with him at all? Like,
no, I think he was kind of like a deadbeat dad to all of his children. Mm-hmm. And he just wasn't interested. And that didn't bother me at the time. I was just like, yeah, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, to hear from his other kids to be like, yeah, we don't really talk to him either, you know, so it just was whatever.
Yeah. Do you think you'll have, besides your aunt coming and seeing you, will you have more reunions, do you think, in the future?
Well, I did meet the bio dad.
Yes.
So, cause yeah, I found out about him in 2020 and he lives in Colorado and we go there quite a bit. And it just kind of lined up, where he had been pressing to meet. And I was like, sure, whatever, we're in the area, let's make it happen. And at the time I was like, this isn't that hard or weird. But now in hindsight, I'm like, that was really weird. So,
did you have to make boundaries with him? Like, how did you navigate that?
Yeah.
Just like full on.
Yeah. I was really open in the beginning. I was really curious. I didn't even know that I had anger in the very beginning or what I was feeling or thinking. It was just all really fast. So, you know, we met and then, you know, I had my son and, you know, they want to send him gifts and be a part of his life. And I mean, I'm open to some of that, but I think it was just, it all came on really fast and heavy. Meanwhile, I am struggling with postpartum anxiety. Like, even like my best friend texting me is like giving me panic, right? It's like, I can barely manage my life in my own bubble to expand it and add a whole other family to it. I just was like, I don't have the capacity for this. Like, my focus is my kid, my marriage, like my work. And I just like, I don't have, you know, my mental health and just trying to stay happy. So I was like, I don't have the capacity for this. And every time I would get like an email or a text, I would just get this like feeling in my gut that somebody was trying to take something from me.
Yeah.
I was like, you're trying to take from me and you're not giving me anything. Which I don't even know if that makes sense or if that's the facts of the case, but it's just like what it felt like. It's like, you want me to give you my love and I don't have any to give you.
Right.
And I can't feel yours.
That and pressure. Like, yeah. Yeah.
It was a lot of pressure. And I was just like, you know, his wife is lovely. I think I've Facebook messaged with his daughter a little bit, but we've never like spoke on the phone or met in person. And, you know, I was thinking about his wife too. I'm like, she didn't know that her husband, they've been married for 30 years.
Yeah.
And to find out that your husband has a child that you never knew about, that's 40. Like, I don't know. To me, I mean, that has to be a trip, right?
Yeah.
And then to be those kids.
Yeah.
They're adults. They're in their 20 something. And to be like, our dad has a kid from when he was a teenager. Like, what?
Yeah, you know, and they're probably like, what does she want? Why is she conducting
it? Totally. You know, and it was actually kind of weird up front because they all took DNA tests like right away, because I don't know if they did believe it. You know, it's like, who's this person coming into our family? I'm like, I did not take a DNA test to find you specifically. And that was the thing too, is I think he's like, you found me. I'm like, no, I didn't. Like, I took a DNA test to like check on some genetics, not realizing that I was going to find you.
Yeah.
And not knowing that this whole situation was going to happen. And, you know, I hate to live with regret. So it's like, sometimes I'm like, God, I just wish I never took that test. But I don't, you know, I'm like every, I don't know. I'm just like, it's fine. It is what it is. But I very recently was just like, look, if you send me an email, if you send me a text, I'm not going to be responding right now. And I'm not saying that I will never respond or that I will never reach out to you. And if you change your mind down the line, that's okay too. But like, this is where I'm at right now. And I am at peace with no contact right now.
And how is he with that?
Not boundary? Great. Not great. Good. I mean, he sent me an email a week later. And that's tough. You know, it's like boundaries are so tough, I think, for anyone, but as an adoptee, who, you know, we people please, and we don't want anyone to be mad at us. We don't want, you know, it's like, I don't want him to be in pain, you know, and it's just like, I have to hold this boundary for me, and holding a boundary feels terrible in my body. It makes me sick to think about like this email that's just out in the universe, and to know that he's probably very frustrated and angry.
Yeah. Is that where the relationship is still today?
Yeah. I mean, the email just came like a week ago, and I was like, I'm not responding to this right now, and that's okay. I set that boundary already. And so now I have to follow through on it, and it sucks. And I've been tempted to text his wife and be like, just so you know, I'm not answering the email because I've set this boundary, and I thought I made this clear, you know?
Yeah.
It makes me feel unsafe.
Mm.
I feel sick to my stomach. I feel like they're going to come steal my baby is the like feeling I get when he contacts me. And I don't know why. I'm not saying that he's that kind of person, but that's just like the feeling that my body gets. And I'm like, I have to honor this. I can't ignore myself.
Yeah, definitely.
And to me, that's been like such a win, is like, listen to your gut, follow your gut, please yourself, not somebody else.
Right. So how did becoming a mother change your perspective on your own adoption?
Again, I think more sadness, more grief, more anger. I don't know. Do you have kids?
Mm-hmm.
I have two. It's like, everybody tells you that cliche of like, it's a love, like you'll never know. And like, I didn't think I'd ever have kids. I didn't really want to be a mom. I really love my freedom. My husband's a musician. We like to have fun. I was just like, oh, I don't want to do this. And I was even kind of like disconnected in my pregnancy. And I don't know if that has to do with my adoption trauma or, you know, but I was just kind of like, I don't know. I'm really scared. And then it's like, you have this person that's yours, and he's my only bio connection. And it's so strong that was what highlighted for me that everything else I have is not anywhere close.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I love everybody else in my family, and I know they love me, but I was like, it's not even close. And so then I question, it's like, oh, is this just like the mother kid connection that's so strong? Like, do other adult women have this connection with their moms? Like, does it feel like that to them? And I don't know.
Yeah. And then you've got that feeling, or you're thinking like, how could your mother give you up?
Oh, I just remember holding him and just being like, you would have to kill me.
Exactly.
And I would kill everybody that comes in the way of this. And it's just like, I can't even imagine. I cannot imagine the trauma of relinquishing a child, especially like a teenager that was kind of coerced and not really given the option.
Yeah. Like, so having your son kind of gave you more compassion for your birth mother instead of feeling, you know, anger.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I've ever felt anger towards her. I don't know. I think I just always felt sadness. I used to think about like the idea of being abandoned, you know, and having this abandonment wound, but lately it's been like, no, it was like relinquishment. And it was relinquishment under some kind of like, you know, coercement that was under the guise of doing the best thing for me.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, I don't know if I believe that.
Right. Yeah.
And I think of her life path too, like maybe she was in prison because of her trauma of
a child.
Like,
yeah,
you know, and when I was on that other podcast, I sent it to my bio aunt. She was like, I never thought about her trauma before. It never even occurred to me that that would be the worst thing to happen to her. I was like, how do
isn't
we
that funny? Like, what do you mean?
Yeah. I'm like, how did we miss that? I'm like, can you imagine giving away a child? It's like, it was just, that's like the lie of adoption, right? Like, you know, she was told like, you're so strong, you're doing the best thing for this kid. And even now I've kind of tried to talk to her about it a little bit. She's like, you know, I'm just so glad I gave you up. That was the best decision I ever made, because look at your life now, look how amazing you are and all this stuff. And it's like, to me, that is the, like, the lie.
Yeah. 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 Let's back it up a little bit and at least acknowledge that separation and what that did to both of you guys. Like,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And that's why I think the idea of reunion with her is like, that's like the big one, because I mean, I can't imagine, like, even if we don't like each other, I just feel like there would be that, like, that knowing, you know, the spiritual body connection where you just be like, ah,
it's so you have not met her in person.
Not in person. No, I think she's, you know, definitely has some mental health stuff and like maybe stemming from this trauma, you know, but it's just thinking like, I don't know if she can handle it, to be honest.
Yeah.
So
you help other adoptees in dealing with their traumas. Tell us what you're doing and what's your why? Why do you do it?
Yeah, so I've been a certified life coach for a while, and I've been coaching in the health and wellness space for the last 10 years. And, you know, what started as just like making meal plans for people and kind of giving them advice and telling them what to do, and then seeing that, oh, they don't do that. You know, it's like people think, oh, if you just tell me what to do, I'll go do it. And then they weren't doing it. It really bridged the gap to me for like of how I coach and why I coach is not, it's like, overeating is usually an underfeeling problem. It's not about like, don't eat the mashed potatoes, have a salad instead. It's like, what are you avoiding in your life by, you know, eating a pint of ice cream? Like, what's really going on for you?
Right.
So I did all this other training and just have really dug into this, you know, behavioral change, mindset, you know, reprogramming. And I've just seen how beneficial it's been for me in this process over the last 3 or 4 years of, you know, like being able to hold space for my grief, my sadness, my anger, and process it and be with it without having to numb it or run away from it. And to also learn, like, this is the way my brain works as an adoptee. Kind of the go-to is like, I'm unworthy, I don't belong here. And to say like, well, that's just this voice, this program that lives inside me, but I don't have to listen to that. I can also decide that I do belong here and that I am worthy. And to me, that's been so powerful in my relationship with my husband, with my kid, with everybody in my life, the way that I walk through the world. And to me, that's like, wow, if I can give that to another adoptee where, yeah, we're not taking away your trauma and, you know, but I want to give you space to be you and to be heard and to, you know, have a place to be. And then also so that you can go live the life that you want and not let this trauma rule you for the rest of your life.
Yeah. What's helped you exactly in dealing with your adoption experience? What's been your healing combination?
I mean, definitely coaching and therapy. It started with therapy for me when I was 30. So I always say at 30, like the programming runs out, right? It's like you go to school, you get good grades, you go to college, you get a job, maybe you get married and have kids. And like, that's like the program. And if you don't hit the program by 30, you self-destruct.
Something bad happens.
And I was like, yeah, I was like 29 and I hadn't done a lot of those things, you know, and I was just like, what is happening? I don't know what the next step is. I don't know who I am. I don't know where I'm at, you know. And so I did, I like broke up with my boyfriend at the time, which was my now husband. And I just kind of had a little bit of a break, like a mental break, but was functioning. And a friend was like, you should probably see a therapist. I was like, rude, but okay. And in that first appointment, we talk about, you know, my parents' divorce and just being a kid and blah, blah, blah. And then within the last 10 minutes, I was like, and by the way, I'm adopted. And thank God I had a therapist that understood the trauma of adoption,
Wow. That's
which
huge.
now I realize is not the norm.
Right.
And that's the other reason why I want to do what I do, is because we need more help in this space.
Yes.
And so she was like, whoa, like, stop. I need to explain something to you. And she explained the brain and the nervous system and separation trauma of how when you were an infant, or, you know, in your mother's body, you know her heartbeat, her voice, her smell. And when you come out and suddenly that's gone, she's not holding you, you're just whisked away. That's an immediate fight or flight.
Yeah.
You immediately think you're about to die. And that imprints on your nervous system. And that sets the programming up for the rest of your life. And so here's why this behavior that you just shared with me lines up exactly with this. And I was like,
Yeah, huge light bulb, right?
huge light bulb. And I felt so screwed up for so long after that. I was like, I am so much more screwed up than I could have ever imagined. It's like, I had no idea. I remember calling my mom, like my adopted mom, being like, Mom, did you know that? You know, she was just like, I don't know what to do with this information, you know? So yeah, that was like the first part of it. And I did a lot of that. And then I ended up getting back together with my now husband. And we did couples therapy with another therapist who was also like somatic and, you know, adoption trauma informed. And that was really helpful because she gave us so many amazing skills and tools, like really for him to understand me, you know, it was like such a gift. And then, you know, you kind of cruise and coast, you know, I was like, I think I'm doing good. And then more circumstances come up, right? And then I was like learning to do the coach stuff. And to me, coaching has been so impactful in different ways. I like coaching because I'm a little bit like, I like a little bit of tough love and I like to be pushed a little bit. And I think like that's kind of the role of coaching, is less about dealing in the past. I mean, yeah, the past matters, but it's also like, let's talk about right now. You know, like let's be in the present moment and see how that affects your future. And we're not ignoring the past and we're still trauma informed, but it's like, but we have choices right now in our present, even with the past. And so to me, that has also just been so helpful to see like the way that I see the world and to know like, huh, what if I could see it differently?
That's big for adoptees. And they
Yeah.
have to be ready for it, you
A
know?
hundred
They
percent, a hundred
have to be ready
percent.
for it.
Yeah, not everybody's ready for it. And I mean, it's like, you know what you know, and your experiences are what you experience. But for me, the coaching has been really helpful over the last 4 years. But I also did a lot of therapy. So I think they both have their role and they can both be really helpful. And then yeah, just talking to other adoptees and, you know, knowing like, oh, I'm not alone, and we have, you know, these commonalities, and this, there is a community of adoptees. And I feel like it's kind of like not new, but it the podcasts and the Facebook groups, like if I had had this when I was 12 or something, I don't know, maybe things would have been different.
Do you think that we can heal from the primal wound?
I'm like, define the word heal. I'm just kidding. I think yes. I mean, I think you can. I think it's not, I think there's like a scar, right? Like I think it's, you can tend to the wound and you can sew it up and put a band-aid on it and nurture it, but it's always there. I think the healing comes in building tools of self-compassion, building tools of expanding your mindset, building tools to have capacity to feel the negative things and not have to fix them or run away from them. And to, you know, make the choice to, you know, be in that more present moment instead of, you know, and it's kind of an indulgence sometimes to go back to the past and to like really like stew in it sometimes. I know this from personal experience. And so, yeah, it's like, what is healing? I think it's being able to recognize what is, be honest and truthful with ourselves about the trauma, not deny it, not cover it up, but also how can we hold space for that? And then also live our lives and find our self-worth and be an identity. Like, how can I create my own identity even if I don't have all the parts?
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I think it's like we do have a choice, I think, to move forward with it. Absolutely.
So what would you like struggling adoptees to know?
Well, you're not alone. We're all struggling. It's hard. I'm like, you are worthy and you do belong. I think that's like super important. I wish that people had said that to me my whole life, right? It's like to figure that out at 40, and that, yeah, it doesn't, your adoption is part of your identity, but it doesn't have to define your future. You know, you can have loving relationships. You can have money. You can have the job that you want. You can have whatever you want, and you don't have to let this be the thing that holds you back forever.
Yeah. So tell the listeners where they can find you, your website, social media.
Yeah. Just come find me. I'm at The Adoptee Coach on Instagram, and it's The Adoptee Coach on TikTok.
Okay.
And my links to my website are in there. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll have those in the show notes as well. Well, thanks so much, Jessica, for coming on today and sharing your story with us. And your coaching sounds very intriguing, so I'm going to check it out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been fun. I mean, I just launched this part of like having an Instagram or a TikTok, and you know, it's such a like wonderful niche, because it's like, you're either an adoptee or you're not.
Yeah.
And so the adoptees, you know, we find each other, and it's just, it's good that we have each other and that we're listening to each other and sharing each other's experiences. I think it's really, really important.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, I really enjoyed Jessica's interview because it shows the world the complexities of adoption and the things that society and non-adoptees don't think about that we have to deal with. You know, finding a family that you thought was your family and forming relationships there, and then finding out that's not your biology and having to go back to those people and tell them that, I'm sorry, I was mistaken. We're not related. Non-adoptees don't have to deal with that. And I don't think a lot of people realize some of these little things that we do have to deal with. And then thinking about complications with reunion and finding her biological father finally, and him just holding on so tightly to her to where she's uncomfortable and having to make boundaries, and how she feels and how he feels, and just putting it all together in a way that works for everybody. Sometimes it just doesn't work. It doesn't work for everybody. And then all of our stories kind of shape us. The complexities of our personal story shape how we move in the world and have what we think about adoption. All our feelings and emotions and beliefs that we have are all shaped by our individual experience. And that's why I like to leave room for everyone's story on this podcast, because I realize that we're all different in how this has shaped us being adopted. And it's going to shape how we think and feel. and I validate your experience. I understand. And just to know that, adoptee, there's so much help out there for you. I'm very intrigued with Jessica's counseling and coaching and what she's doing. And don't forget that I am a somatic practitioner. If you are interested in that, get in touch with me. MindYourOwnKarma@gmail.com is my email, and MindYourOwnKarma.com for my website. Jessica's links are in the show notes if you're interested in her coaching as well. So if you are in need of a therapist, I have a ton of resources for you. Get in touch with me. As always, take what you need and leave what you don't. And always remember to mind your own karma. I'll see you next time.